from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Protecting our rights is a matter of exercising those rights that we are granted. You will not get your rights if you don't stand up for them.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Will Morrissey, Professor Emeritus of Politics here at Hillsdale College, and author of the recent essay over at Real Clear Public Affairs, Self-Government, the American Way. We talk at length with Dr. Morrissey about that piece on this week's program. You can also find him online at willmorrisseyreviews.com for book reviews and more. Dr. Morrissey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Scott.
Glad to have you back. We continue, in fact, with another piece that you wrote over at Real Clear Public Affairs as part of a series they're running there. This one is called Self-Government, the American Way. Take us back a little to 1776. As the Americans, as the new Americans are moving from governing as colonists to governing as an independent nation, what are some of those changes? What are the differences that they're going through? What are they noticing?
Well, one of the main things that they want to do is to become a sovereign, that is to say, self-governing people, rather than, as you say, just colonists of the British Empire. And in order to do that, they have to do two things. One is that they have to assert their rights, and the other, which is what we normally associate with the Declaration of Independence, assertions of rights. But they also very clearly outline 10 moral responsibilities, 10 duties that they undertake to honor.
What measures do they take to work to strengthen this new union that they've created?
Aside from the political and military measures that we're all pretty familiar with, what they do is to declare their independence, and they, in doing so, they don't just say we're independent. They give you a logical syllogism, a reasoned argument why we should be independent. What we are doing, explaining to, as they put it, a candid world, an unbiased world. In other words, what we are about in declaring our independence and fighting for it.
You write in this piece over at Real Clear Public Affairs that to understand American self-government, one should begin with the First Amendment to the Constitution. I'll read it. Never hurts to hear it again. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So why do we start there?
Well, in this case, obviously the first thing you would start with would be the Declaration of Independence. However, in terms of the Constitution, there's no harm in starting with the statement of first principles that is laid down in the Bill of Rights. And the First Amendment, which is only the First Amendment by chance, happens to be a very good chance, a sort of a providential chance, you might say. And in outlining those 10 responsibilities in the Declaration, one of the things that they understood was that one of the main pillars of moral conduct, of duties, is religious belief and religious conviction. And so they do two things basically in that with respect to religion in the Bill of Rights, which is that they deny that there will be an established religion. That is to say, they're saying that there won't be a state church, mm-hmm. like the Anglican Church in England, the Catholic Church in France, Germany, which was then 37 different sovereign countries. Some of them were Lutherans, some of them were, in the South especially, were Catholic countries. They all had established churches. This was turned out to be a bad idea. They did intend to develop the moral character of the people with these established churches, but the problem was that committed them to the need to determine who was a real Catholic, who was a real Lutheran, who was a real Christian. What the Americans do, because their founding is based on unalienable natural rights, they say essentially, you can be whatever religious confession you want as long as that religious confession does not involve you in conduct that violates the natural or civil rights of others. The other thing, though, is that it's not just a matter of avoiding a religious establishment. It's also a matter of giving freedom of religion, mm-hmm. freedom to be religious, freedom to be religious without fear of being persecuted. As long as you stay within the basic framework of the American regime, which is, as I say, natural and civil rights, you're okay.
Let's get to that second part, the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press. What did the founders have in mind when they're outlining this portion of the amendment?
The main thing they're interested in is civic freedom, that is to say, political speech. They're not interested. Today, people think First Amendment rights mean you can just publish anything you want. It's not really freedom. It's license, right? It's a kind of license to say or do whatever you want with speech or writing. Not so in the founders. Obviously, in the founders, there were pretty serious laws concerning obscenity. And general restrictions on that kind of speech. Some states had laws against blasphemy. That's not necessarily a violation of freedom of speech. What is a violation of freedom of speech would be a violation of someone trying to clamp down on people for their religious or their religious opinions or their political opinions.
Talking with Will Morrissey here, Professor Emeritus of Politics at Hillsdale College. His piece is at realclearpublicaffairs.com. Self-government the American way. And that third leg of the First Amendment, peaceably assemble and to petition the government. Why would they include this in the First Amendment?
Well, to peaceably assemble means, of course, to deliberate in common. Again, if the American founding is based on the principle of reason, on a logical syllogism like the Declaration of Independence, then people must be allowed to reason in public with one another. They must be able to address the people they've elected to govern them, and they must be able to criticize them freely in a civil way without fear of reprisal. And this is typical of the way political figures very often will operate, right? The temptation, if you're in a political position, is to try to clamp down on anyone who has the nerve to get up at a public meeting and complain about your conduct. And it's an understandable human motive that unfortunately has been expressed all too often in the course of human history. But that's what they're trying to avoid. What they want is true politics. Aristotle talks about political life on the basis of the family. The family is not the individual, but the family is the key unit in Aristotle. The founders would agree with this.
Final question for Dr. Will Morrissey. We talked about his piece in Real Clear Public Affairs. It's one thing to acknowledge and enlist these natural rights and write the amendment. How do we effectively then protect them?
Protecting our rights is a matter of exercising those rights that we are granted. You will not get your rights if you don't stand up for them. I happen to be on the city council here in Hillsdale, and I like it when people come into our council meetings and say things and talk about things. And it doesn't bother me a bit if people come in and challenge whatever it is we're doing, that they should do that. As long as they're doing it in a civil way and they're making substantive points, I'm happy to hear it.
Dr. Will Morrissey, Professor Emeritus of Politics at Hillsdale College. This piece, Self-Government, the American Way, over at Real Clear Public Affairs. And you can find more writing at willmorrisseyreviews.com. Dr. Morrissey, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, we're joined by historian Arthur Herman to discuss his new book, The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for alumni, or friends of Hillsdale, check out hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Arthur Herman. He's senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. You can find him on Twitter at Arthur L. Herman, and author of the brand new book, The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. Arthur, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
So how would you define these cultural characteristics of the Vikings, the Scandinavians? What do you mean by the Viking heart, essentially?
The Viking heart, what I talk about is, and I have to understand, this is separate from the question about the Vikings themselves as being, you know, warriors and being marauders and so on. This was an aspect of life throughout Dark Age Europe at the time in which the Viking Age unfolded. And so it's no surprise that those were the skills that Viking heart was concentrated on, because it was the skills needed to survive in an environment like that, in an inhospitable environment like Scandinavia, you know, with the incredibly cold winters, scarce and meager resources. But what developed as a result of that environment is this extraordinary sense of community and shared cultural values that held the Scandinavian tribes, that held the separate Viking kingdoms together through those centuries. But also at the same time, a value that was placed on the freedom of the individual to venture forth, to take and assume great risks in order to bring back the goods, the services, the commodities that the community needed in order to survive. So you get with this, what I call the Viking heart, you get on the one hand a very strong sense of group identity, of solidarity, but also at the same time balanced by a respect for the individual who must follow his or her own path in order to benefit the community as a whole.
Why were the Vikings the ones to do this vast exploration? How did their activity help unlock benefits for all society?
Well, it really made it possible was the technology that they had at their disposal, which was the Viking longship, which had as a unique characteristics of a ship that was, on the one hand, strong and buoyant enough to survive oceanic voyages, but also, at the same time, had a shallow enough draft that it would be able to move from oceanic or sea voyages to running up the river courses and deep into the interior of the countries and communities that they preyed upon at the height of the Viking era. And combined that with the square sail, which gave them enormous speed and maneuverability at sea, and they really are they're the original expeditionary warfares. They're the original exponents of sea power, even in its modern form, and in what domination of the seas and sea routes can really bring in terms of wealth, in terms of power, in terms of of connectivity with other countries and other cultures. And really the sea routes, as I explain in the book, the sea routes that the Vikings laid down with those incredible voyages and expeditions become the sea routes that the future of the Atlantic system and even today's global economic order depend upon. They really lay out the sea routes and the trading routes that modern prosperity and the evolution of modern societies have depended upon ever since. They're really the precursors of globalization. And I think that's one of the main points about this book and about what the Viking heart was able to accomplish in its time and in its place.
Do you think that we see the impact of Scandinavians specifically on, say, the American spirit or the American personality?
I do, and that's really the second half of the book. The first half of the book is about the Viking Age itself, and then how that Viking Age was changed with the coming of Christianity, which had an enormous impact and reshaping, and really brings the Viking Age to an end with its ferocity and its ruthless violence and marauding expeditions against others. And really becomes, really, it gives birth to the medieval Scandinavian kingdoms. That's on one side. But then the second half of the book is how, as Scandinavia fell further and further behind the rest of Europe in terms of economic development in the 18th and 19th centuries, Scandinavia's poorest had to find a place in which they could build new lives for themselves and for their families. And so you had hundreds of thousands of Swedes and Norwegians and Danes who set off across the Atlantic in order to find a new life for themselves in the United States. And that's one of the important points about the Scandinavian immigration. It all takes place when America has already established itself as a land of liberty, as the place where you can go in order to carve out a new life for yourselves, to find arable land. this is what, of course, drew Scandinavians to the great Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
All those acres, you know, endless acres of land waiting to be cultivated and brought under the plow and to raise food for yourself and for your livestock and your family. It was unimaginable riches from their point of view, given the scarcity of arable land back in their homeland. And so they bring the skills with them from the frozen north, including, you know, lumberjacking skills, of penetrating into the great forests of the upper Midwest, in places like Minnesota and Michigan and Wisconsin, but also to bring with it that incredible skill set that I've been talking about, the Viking heart.
Arthur Herman, the book The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. Why do you think, then, that Vikings have had such an influence on our popular culture, whether it be sports team nicknames or TV shows or Hagar the Horrible in the Sunday morning comics? Oh, why are we interested in these Vikings?
Oh, my God, who can forget Hagar the Horrible, right? It is. And it is interesting, isn't it, how that manages to survive. And it's a perennial interest, and not just to people who are Scandinavian descent. You know, my grandmother, who was Norwegian, who came from Norway just before World War One, and so on, she was always proud of her Viking heritage. And even Scandinavians today, who, you know, we think about as being, you know, very Pacific, certainly not prone to violence, in their daily lives or in their view of the world, but they take quiet pride in that Viking heritage. So what is it? And I think at the end of the book, I talk about the way in which the Vikings as icons, cultural icons, capture that sense that we all have of having to venture forth into the world, to deal with unknown challenges, to confront a world that is in many cases very hostile, but in many cases provides opportunities to create new directions and new future for ourselves and for our families. And I think the Vikings really encapsulate that.
Arthur Herman, Senior Fellow at the Hudson Institute. Find him on Twitter at Arthur L. Herman. And the brand new book is out now, The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. Arthur, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's been a pleasure.
Up next, Dwight Lindley from Hillsdale's English Department returns for his occasional series on Victorian poetry. We look at Gerard Manley Hopkins. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Professionals from all over the world have been working remotely, and the hardest part is finding a great place to focus and get the job done. Drop in Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East offers modern and clean workspaces, call booths, conference rooms, and secure fast Wi-Fi. Drop-in's pricing is pay-as-you-go, with bundles of hours as low as $3 an hour. No contracts, no obligations. Drop in Go Working, 155 Lake Boulevard East, next door to Starbucks and Subway across from Waterworks Park. Drop in for an hour or more and try it out. Dropin.mobi. That's dropin.mobi.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. With all the talk about gun control and stripping firearms rights from law-abiding citizens, I just want you to remember that our country was founded on the idea that we would each be accountable to ourselves and each other for the safety of our society. Another important responsibility we have is a safe and effective use of a firearm. If that is your choice, give NFI a call at 999-1822 or find and register for one of our popular CCW courses at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Income-eligible renters impacted by COVID-19 can now get 100% of their past due rent and utility bills paid through the California COVID-19 Rent Relief Program. Landlords with tenants who haven't paid rent because of COVID-19 are eligible for 100% reimbursement, too. The application is fast, your information is private, and you won't be asked about citizenship. Apply at housingiskey.com before eviction protections end on September 30th. Brought to you by the California Department of Housing and Community Development.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. To get an email every time there's a new episode of this show, or to find earlier episodes, head to radiohour.hillsdale.edu. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Dwight Lindley, Associate Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Lindley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks again.
Our occasional series on Victorian poetry returns. And today we speak of Gerard Manley Hopkins. What should people know about Gerard Manley Hopkins?
Sure, that's a good question. We should first say he, like many others, was on this trajectory where he went to private schools and then ended up at Oxford and was classically educated. We could say the same thing for Alfred Lord Tennyson, for Matthew Arnold, whom we've covered in weeks past. Something I should say about him is religion was more important for him. It was important for all of them, but there's some religious details that are important for Hopkins that we should maybe fill in. There was a kind of religious landscape I mentioned when we were discussing Matthew Arnold the other day, that a lot of people were losing their faith, especially mm-hmm. the educated classes. There was also there were different movements heading in different directions. There was, as I mentioned when I discussed Browning, there were dissenters and kind of evangelicals, lower church Protestants. Then there was also a kind of high church Protestant movement, which came to be called Anglo-Catholicism, still in evidence today. You know, Lutheranism and Presbyterianism were much more on the margins for England at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then some of these high church Anglicans became Roman Catholic, and that is the story of Gerard Manley Hopkins, who left the faith of his upbringing and became Roman Catholic, and even became a priest, a Jesuit priest, who absolutely horrified his family and alienated him from them. So that's a bit of background. It's not, he doesn't write about religion kind of socially exactly, but there's always a kind of religious or theological framework for his poems, and really I would say nature was at the heart of his poems, but always nature as a site of encounter with the divine. One of his most famous poems is called God's Grandeur. And people who have heard any poems of his, this is still well loved of Christians who love poetry today, of all denominations. This poem, God's Grandeur, really, I think, catches his approach to nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't read the whole thing, but he begins famously with the line, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God." And then he goes on, "It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed." And then he talks about how humans are always trampling down nature, the world that is charged with this grandeur. They're trampling it down with not only with their boots, but with their industrial civilization, and using it up and squeezing it up and getting it dirty and leaving it filthy behind them and not really caring about it and missing the beauty of it and its kind of revelatory capacity. But then the end of the poem says, "And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, oh, morning, at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breast and with, bright wings." And so he says, nature is never spent. You still have the Holy Ghost hovering over the face of the earth, like you get at the beginning of Genesis, right? That's what he's thinking
right.
of. You have the Holy Spirit hovering over the face of the deep at the moment of creation. Well, Hopkins says, yeah, and that's still happening. No matter how much we tramp it down and we mess up the earth that we live in and miss, frankly, its beauty and its revelatory capacity, God still has it creatively in its hand and will remake it, and it will outlive our bad use of it in his hands. And so all of his poems are striving to find that kind of creative energy mm-hmm. of the divine coming out in these little things of natural beauty, also human life, of course. But that's a big theme for him.
There were an analogy there to also perhaps religion. No matter how much we mess up our lives, there is still this opportunity for a refreshing and
right.
ability for faith and for God to come and say, "It's all right. I'm still here."
No, that's quite right. And I think interestingly for Hopkins, he thought that those times when we're brought low like that, just like very much parallel to when nature is brought low and crushed, it's those times of low of when we're brought low that we can actually paradoxically see mm-hmm. the magnificence of God most, because we need it the most. Right? When everything's fine, you don't need anything. People pray when they're brought to their knees, And so I think that's an excellent parallel. So another theme, just going a little further, I already mentioned the kind of revelatory power of nature. He would say that it was the most specific characteristic little motions and actions of people, but also things in the world, that most revealed what they were and also God in them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another famous poem of him where he's watching a bird, the kingfisher, fly, and he says, watching it fly, because the kingfishers have a little red and orange in their breast feathers, and he says when they're watching them fly, it's like seeing them catch fire, and it's in their characteristic motions these revelatory, powerful moments of transcendence flash through. And this is something that runs throughout his poetry in his experience of people, but also others. Let me just read a little bit of this poem. "As kingfishers catch fire, dragonflies draw flame. As tumbled over rim in roundy wells, stones ring, like each tucked string tells, each hung bell's bough swung, finds tongue to fling out broad its name. Each mortal thing does one thing and the same, deals out that being indoors, each one dwells. Selves, goes itself, myself it speaks and spells, crying, what I do is me, For that I came. So what is he saying here? He's saying that each thing in its characteristic action reveals itself, says, goes itself, he says, says, what I do is me, right? It reveals itself in its action. We do this all too, he thought. The things that are most characteristically you reveal who you are. Action reveals the self. And then he goes on at the end of the poem to say, and it reveals the creator of the self. Like, it's in these moments that you catch flashes of the divine. And he ends by saying that Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his, to the Father through the features of men's faces. So these little things about life you catch flashes of the creator of that life, and it's in our greatest particularity that we reveal, you know, the things about us that are unlike anyone ever,
mm-hmm.
that we reveal the hand of the creator. It's pretty striking stuff, you know.
We have just an extra moment here. I haven't had the opportunity to ask this question yet. What do your students say about Hopkins when you teach?
Oh, they just become absolutely addicted to it. I mean, it's like a gateway drug to poetry. There are a few poets like this that I will just say college students, okay, are just in a place where this kind of vision really catches them because they're hungry for transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, later on you get into the workaday world and you have to make a paycheck, and there are different times in your life for different things.
Yes,
but college people want to catch fire. They want to see what is so awesome, what is worth living for. Where are these moments that are charged with the meaning of everything? And so my students, I mean, swallow that down whole in Hopkins.
Dr. Dwight Lindley, Associate Professor of English at Hillsdale College, talking about Gerard Manley Hopkins in our series on Victorian poetry. Dr. Lindley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me again, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Jay Waldron. He's National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting, and he spent time on Hillsdale's campus with many athletes training. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
There's more to explore with a Turtle Bay membership. Get unlimited access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and beyond. Family memberships are only $90 a year. That's less than $8 a month for a whole year of fun. Join today at turtlebay.org.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come. 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at SimpsonU.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Join Turtle Bay and Dutch Bros Coffee on Thursday, September 16th for Caffeinate for a Cause. From 7 to 9 a.m. and 2 to 4 p.m., $1 from all drink sales and tips given to our honorary baristas go towards supporting Turtle Bay education programming. To learn more, visit turtlebay.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can email the show at radiohour@hillsdale.edu, radiohour@hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Jay Waldron. He is National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting. Jay, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me today.
And we'll talk in just a bit about the wonderful partnership that is now in place between Hillsdale College and USA Shooting and our Halter Sports Center. But first, I have to congratulate you and USA Shooting for the tremendous performance at the recent Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo. 6 Olympic medals for USA Shooting. What about the experience itself? You mentioned it's been a different year. It's been a tough year in many ways. Tell us what you guys accomplished.
Well, I got to tell you, it was really surreal over there in Tokyo, and just really super proud of the whole team, how they went over there and just focused singularly on getting the job done. With we had a ton of distractions this year, as everybody knows. We've been going through a lot of things in the nation, but the athletes were able to get to Tokyo and just really get focused on their job to do over there. And, really did a great job with it, and it's pretty amazing. It's one of our best Olympic showings in quite some time, and Shotgun itself brought 4 medals out of 5 events, and I don't even know how words can describe, the feeling of such a successful moniker event.
To be specific, 3 gold medals in men's air rifle, women's skeet, and men's skeet, 2 silvers in mixed team air rifle and women's trap, and 1 bronze in mixed team trap. Jay, tell us a little bit about your job as coach. These are world-class athletes. They have trained, they have practiced for a large portion of their life. By the time you hit the Olympic Games or even, any of these big competitions, what's your role as coach? Are you looking for little things here and there? Are you talking to them about the mental side of things? What do you see as your role?
Well, I really think, at an event like the Olympic Games, it's to present an atmosphere and an aura, basically, around the team and build that up with the team, not only the team itself drawing strength from itself being a team and, being good team members, but just creating an environment where it's okay to win, to put it out there and to fail, and just to be yourself and to go out there and do the best you possibly can. And I think that we were super successful with that environment this year, and it just really allowed our athletes to go out and focus on performing and not really worrying about all the other little things around them.
Talking with Jay Waldron, he is National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting. And USA Shooting and Hillsdale College now have a partnership in place at the John Halter Shooting Center, which is just a little off campus here in Hillsdale, Michigan. Tell us about what that entails. How are Hillsdale and USA Shooting sort of linked at this point going forward?
I mean, this partnership started in 2019. I came out here on a trip, and the Halter Shooting Center was nothing that it is today, I can tell you that. I mean, it was a beautiful facility at the time. But Hillsdale College just had this vision of building this immensely world-class shooting facility. And it's a lot like the Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. And I think they had that dream of building it and we will come. And we came out and took a look and met the folks out here at Hillsdale and decided it would be a good partnership for USA Shooting and the college to kind of jump in together and form this partnership, this alliance. And since that time, Hillsdale has just been going crazy on their range facilities in the last year and a half. Got to give a shout out to Bart Spieth on this for just putting his nose to the grindstone, so to speak, and during those COVID times, and getting the construction of the ranges done for the shotgun side anyway. And now we truly do have a world-class shotgun range, one of the first in the nation of its kind of this quality and standard. So it's really been, starting to grow exponentially since that time. And this is our first summer out here running events and camps and having shooters come in and out. And I got to tell you, it's just been a wonderful experience all the way around.
So tell us a little bit more about how USA Shooting is using the John Halter Shooting Center for training. Are there athletes here essentially throughout the year, at least during the warmer months here in Michigan? How does USA Shooting using the Halter Shooting Center?
There's probably a trifold way. You know, one, we're running some big events out here. So we ran our Junior Olympic National Championships, already ran that event, and it was very successful. We have our national championships coming up here in September, starting on September the 6th and running through the 19th. So that's another huge big event. We're probably going to bring in a couple hundred people anyway with that event and all the extra mom and dad and all that stuff. So pretty big event and fun. We just concluded with our junior world team training camp, which was amazing to have Hillsdale behind us and helping us with logistics of running a camp for 30 shooters. It's a quite a daunting task. Hmm. And it was very delightful to have, a staff and crew and just the wonderful folks out here at Hillsdale helping support that. And not only with that, then we have some of our high-end athletes that just, come in and come out to train. Before the Olympic Games, we had several Olympians out here just coming in for a few days to get tuned up or just to talk and, work through a few things. So it's just, on all fronts, it's hitting on all cylinders right now with the relationship with Hillsdale and the range facility.
Talking with Jay Waldron, National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting here on the program. You mentioned some of the camps that are taking place at John Halter Shooting Center here in Hillsdale, Michigan. And what is USA Shooting, and how is Hillsdale helping in that effort to train the youth, to encourage USA Shooting or encourage shooting as an athletic venture among some of the younger adults here across the country? What's happening there?
Well, right off the bat, they have the Hillsdale College shooting team is functioning out of that facility. So that's one thing that's really started to grow, and that shooting team is really starting to be quite successful under the tutelage of Coach Jordan Hintz. And so that's one thing that they're offering for their students and their student body is that activity of the student shooting. Hillsdale also pushed what we're calling a JODC camp or a junior development camp this year that ran through Hillsdale College, and they helped facilitate all the money and the dorms and all the different logistics that go into that with putting on this camp. And USA Shooting provided the instructors and help with some of the logistics on that side. So it was kind of a really good marriage between the two of us, and this allowed some not only just beginning shooters to come and experience the games, but some intermediate to advanced shooters as well. And then we just, like I said, finished with the World Team Camp. Mm-hmm. For our juniors. They're getting ready to go to Lima, and what Hillsdale could help us with infrastructure there with dorms and transportation and just all these little things that you don't think of that really help make camp experience something special and to be remembered.
You can find out more about USA Shooting at usashooting.org and more about Hillsdale and the John Halter Shooting Center, of course, at hillsdale.edu. Jay Waldron, National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting. Congratulations on the tremendous achievements at the Tokyo Olympics recently. And we look forward to continuing to see you here around Hillsdale and around campus. Thanks for joining us.
Sound great. And if you have a minute, come on out and see our national championships September 6th to the 19th. Visitors are welcome to come out, check it out, see what's going on.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Will Morrissey, Professor Emeritus of Politics at Hillsdale, as we talked about his essay, Self-Government, the American Way. Arthur Herman, his new book, The Viking Heart. Dwight Lindley from Hillsdale's English Department and Gerard Manley Hopkins. And finally, Jay Waldron, National Shotgun Coach for USA Shooting. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including Arthur Herman this week, on the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or on Facebook. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Over for savings at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Buy 5 car wash coupons and get 1 free. Or buy 10 and get 3 free. Quick and Clean is a family-owned business. They offer only the highest quality service. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Quick and Clean.
Simpson University for Seniors, now in its 12th year, is offering 2 classes in September for adults of any age interested in learning. Early registration is encouraged. Classes start September 8th. Larry Porta will present a course on the most hated president in American history called The Life of Andrew Johnson. Professor Timothy Orr will teach a course on the history of Islam and its expansion entitled Of Caliphs and Kings. Classes meet from 10:20 to 11:20 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on Simpson University's campus. The cost is $95 per person per course or $145 for couples registering for the same course. For more information, email gschafer@simpsonu.edu or call 530-226-4602. Simpson University is located at 2211 College View Drive in Reading.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed. It's time to embrace American values. Our society is based on the freedom, not begging the government for permission. It's time to wake up, my brothers and sisters. Come check out my show every other Sunday, 8 to 9, Liberty Unabashed.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
I expected it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit. My family.
Playing with my daughter, I felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Magic happens between the notes. Linda Bott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And joining us today is Linda Bott. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. So we wanted to give you, our listeners, an idea of what it's like to be on stage, to be performing in front of a bunch of different people. So I dragged Linda Bott in because she's done this since you were a kid, right?
Yes. I professionally started working at 15.
Wow.
So I could say that's when I first started getting paid. But I have been singing, you know, basically growing up in the country where you've got horses and trees and the creativity of what it is to have imaginary friends and audiences. And, you know, I was the most famous person living in the country.
Yeah. Wow.
So, tell us about how you got your start. What exactly is it that you do?
I was basically just naturally, I think, gifted in the fact that I have a good ear and that my parents belonged to Capitol Records. And one of the albums was Barbra Streisand. My brother to this day can't stand listening to anything Barbra Streisand because I emulated every single intonation and tone and breath. And so she basically was my voice teacher. And I learned how to hold my breath and have these big tones. And so that's what I do, is I sing. And then down the road, you know, that meant jingles, that meant recording, that meant, okay, do you want to be in this show? You have to learn these lines. Okay, can you dance? So I kind of did the acting, singing, and dancing, and did some stage plays and was in a couple theatrical productions in high school and doing stuff like that.
I think the first time I met you was on the local stage here. I was working behind the scenes and helping get set pieces up and on. And it was a Christmas show.
Are you talking Martinis with Santa?
Yes.
I wrote that show.
Nice.
And produced that show. So that was a really big undertaking for me because I had written a song with one of my Nashville buddies named Cam King. And we wrote the song Martinis with Santa. And I, okay, now what am I going to do with this song? I recorded it a few times in different albums that I have produced and actually released. Besides trying to fill the seats, making sure the seats were filled, it was just a glorious experience.
So you are stage performer, you are a singer. A lot of people have a very specific image in mind when they think of someone who's a performing artist. They think about actors, actresses, the glamour, the flashing cameras. They think about Broadway and all of the
jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
Literal jazz hands.
I don't know. So that's interesting because I think we all see the world through our own personal lens. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, first of all, it's a craft. There's a lot of grunt work involved in what it is. People just think you just roll out of bed and you have no idea the grunt work that goes into performing and what it is to, it's a lot of energy to put on high heels and put on clothes. And when you're hungry, you'll take any job. I used to say to my agent, just give me the Ramada Inn, I'll take a piano bar for $30. And that's the truth.
So if you could embed an idea into our audience's mind of what you do, what would it be?
I connect with people. I try to please people. It's an energy for me to feed people, but it also feeds me. So I feel like when I feed them, they feed me. It's a cycle. It's an energy circle.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.